Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast and PBT Extra podcast. A little bit different today. No Corey Robinson. We're bringing in another guest, Sean Hyken from the Rose Garden Report, covering the Trailblazers to talk NBA draft. Sean, incredibly knowledgeable, a little bit shorter than Corey Robinson, but
I don't have the same genes that he has.
No, he comes with some genetic gifts, but. Very knowledgeable about the draft. Sean, thanks for coming in here, man.
How you doing, Kurt? Good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, Sean. Of course, worked with me at NBC for a long time, and now covering the Blazers full-time for his own...
Subscription newsletter.
I was going to go, what do I want to call this eventually? Yeah.
That's kind of what it... If people are familiar with like what James Hamm is doing in Sacramento or what like Scott Agnes is doing in Indiana. Those are just a couple off the top of my head. Obviously Stein is doing it at the national level, but that's kind of a different thing, but
right. Exactly. You could, but there's podcasts, there's subscription writing. And if you're a Trailblazers fan, look, this is the best place to get information. And right now, Sean, Trailblazers are right in the middle of everything, aren't they?
1 week until showtime, man.
1 week. We'll start there. I mean, obviously, we were joking about it before we came on. There's not much drama at number one. The Spurs take Wembanyama at number one. But then the real drama starts with the number two and three pick being available. Let's get the thing everybody's going to ask out of the way up top. You've heard, I think, the exact same thing that I've heard from everyone, which is Portland's not looking to trade Lillard. They're looking to trade the pick. They want to. The plan is still to build around him and build a playoff threat team around him.
Yes, that's correct. I've heard nothing from their end that's not what they're thinking. I've heard nothing from Dame's end that he wants to leave. So I think I understand why it keeps being a topic, but it's as of right now, it's not a thing really from either side right now.
Right, and it's. My impression has always been it would have to come from Lillard's side. Ultimately, I mean, maybe Portland, in theory, could at some point go to him and say, look, man, sort of like what's about to happen in Washington, right? Like,
right.
Hey, Bradley, we're done. We're rebuilding this thing. Can we trade you? And how can we? And in Pike, in Lillard's case, it would be very much a, all right, how can we help you get where you want to go? I think there'd be a certain amount of that, right? But they're not anywhere close to that.
Not to the degree even that it would be for Beal. The difference between the two of their situations is that Beal has a no trade clause, so he literally can control where he goes. Whereas with Portland, I think if it ever came to that, I don't even think if it came to it, he would go to them and say, I want to be traded. I think it would be, they would go to him and say, we're going to go in another direction. We want to rebuild. And he wouldn't fight it. I think that's more what it would be. But I think even if it were to come to that, which again, it has not come to that. Close to coming to that. They would want to do him a solid and get him to a decent situation. But I don't think they would let him say, for example, I only want to go to Miami and then, okay, we'll just take pennies on the dollar to get you to Miami. They would need to make a deal that actually makes sense for them. And part of why, and I wrote this recently, even if he were to go to them and say, I want to be traded, they're not going to trade him unless they have a deal they like. He's under contract for 4 more years, and I don't think he's really wired to do what James Harden did and hold out of training camp and make it into a problem. So, you know, I understand that this is the time of year where, oh, this star could be available for trade. Like, let's talk about it all the time. But it genuinely from all sides, from his side and the Blazers side, the idea of Damian Lillard being available for a trade, wanting to be traded, it's not a thing right now.
Right. If I did write this today, and I do believe this, if I'm in Miami shoes, I might be a little bit patient with the Beal thing until after the draft, just to see, because at the end of the day, Lillard is at this point in their careers, and frankly, at most points in their careers, but at this point right now, Lillard is a vastly superior player to Bradley Beal, a more reliable player. He's better when he's on the court. He is more likely to be on the court and healthy. So I would wait just a little, just to be sure, because I know who I'd want if it came up. But they're going to go after, look, like we said, neither of us think there's a Damian Lillard trade coming anytime in the imminent future, near future, and Washington will move on and get their guy. And that kind of brings us to, they're looking to trade the pick, and is this all about Scoot? Is this kind of like teams positioning themselves for Scoot, and so Charlotte's in play trying to see what they can get for the pick, maybe?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think the consensus for months has been that, you know, it's Wemby 1, Scoot 2. Just the fact that Charlotte, you know, for whatever's out there as far as noise and, you know, you don't know where anything is coming from, but just the idea that Charlotte might actually want Brandon Miller. I have heard that there are other teams. Washington is actually one, speaking of Bradley Beal. I don't think there's really any trade that's workable with him for the second or the third pick. But
I don't think so either. But, yeah.
But just to give you an example, Washington is a team that I've heard in the last few days is interested in moving up into the top two or three, and that they're zeroing in on Brandon Miller as what they would want to do if they moved up. So I don't think they're the only team that feels that way. So I don't think it's just, you know, if, you know, like, but like for example, like, I don't think a trade for Portland with New Orleans, which I'm sure we're going to get to,
yes,
would be on the table if Charlotte takes Scoot at two, because it's very obvious and very well known that the reason New Orleans wants to move up is because they want Scoot. I don't think they're interested in moving up and giving up the same stuff that it would take to move up to take Brandon Miller, for example. But there are other teams. Like, I don't think the value of Portland's pick around the league just completely tails off if Scoot goes number two. I think there are still teams that would be very interested in moving up to draft Brandon Miller.
You've looked at both of them pretty closely, I imagine, a little bit, or at least done some research. What do you think? Look, Brandon Miller can shoot. He looks like a prototypical wing. But I got to say that when I've seen Scoot, and then I've had the chance to kind of talk to him All-Star weekend this year, he impresses me as a person. He is so explosive athletically that, all right, I get it. I get the concern about the jump shot. Dude's young and going to figure it out. And I just think, I don't know. He just strikes me as, I'm not a scout. He just struck me as a, and I don't know Brandon Miller that much outside of seeing him on tape, but Scoot strikes me as a guy who could be an absolute beast in this league.
I can second what you said about being really impressed with Scoot as a person. The Blazers brought him in for a workout a couple weeks ago, and we did a little bit of an interview media, you know, one of those media scrum sessions with him afterwards. Very, very impressed with him in that way, and I've never heard anything but great things about him from that regard. It's obviously, with Portland, the fit is a little bit weird because he's a 6'2" point guard, and they kind of have one of those who they're ostensibly still trying to build everything around. It's not as much of a redundant thing as like a Lillard-McCollum thing was, or you know what they have currently with him and Anthony Simons, because they're different types of players. The player comps, and I'll fully admit I haven't watched nearly as much G League Ignite as some other folks who are in kind of the draft scouting space. I'm not like a, you know, I start learning about these guys when the pre-draft process starts. So I'm not like the expert on Scoot, but the comparisons that I've seen for him are, you know, Russell Westbrook and Ja Morant and pre-injury Derrick Rose, which, you know, if he hits that ceiling, that's obviously a damn good player, but that's a very different kind of player than what Damian Lillard is. And so I think the thought is that even, you know, with the size issues and the defensive issues that would come with that, you could figure out a way to make it work. The question is, you know, how psyched would Dame be about bringing in a guard that is going to have to play that much if he's going to be as good as people say he's going to be? And how does that match up with him wanting to have a chance to contend? Brandon Miller, they haven't brought in actually yet for a workout. I believe that's going to happen at some point in the next. I mean, it obviously has to happen in the next week, but I have been told it's going to happen soon. So that's going to happen soon. You would think just on paper, that's a little bit more of a clean fit. You know, there's a reason that Charlotte is thinking that maybe he's a better fit next to LaMelo Ball than Scoot Henderson would be. So, you know, you would think he's like a prototypical 3-and-D guy. Obviously, there's some off-court stuff with him, too, that's going to have to be addressed with whatever team he ends up getting drafted by. But again, the Blazers haven't brought him in yet, so I don't know how that conversation went. I would imagine it's going to have to be a conversation that they have at some point. So I don't know, you know, where they value. And I will also say this, they have not only brought in those two for workouts. They've brought in, as far as guys, like they've been doing workouts for the whole month. Most of the guys they brought in have been guys that might be in play with the 23rd pick, which is what they have, or, you know, in the second round. A lot of it is kind of projected, you know, lower guys. But as far as, you know, guys that could potentially be in play for the third pick, they brought in Scoot. They're going to bring in Miller at some point in the next couple of days. They brought in both of the twins, Amen and Asar Thompson, from Overtime Elite. And they brought in yesterday, they brought in Cam Whitmore from Villanova, who's projected to go in the top five. So I don't know how much of this is just posturing that, hey, you know, we're totally happy to keep the pick if we don't see an offer we like. But they have been doing their due diligence about not just Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller, but some other guys who could potentially, you know, be in play, you know, in that spot if they decide to keep the pick.
Yeah, by the way, everything I've heard about Miller, who's like a 6'9 wing, is that he's the prototypical potential modern NBA wing. Athletic, mobile, creates his own shot, catches and shoots well. Although everybody's talking about Scoot's shot, Miller's shot faded at the second half of the season, 3-for-19 against San Diego State in the NCAA tournament. I don't know how much of a concern that is. I don't want to put a whole lot on one game, and I haven't watched a ton of him. But the idea is that that's a position of need. Everybody is looking for two-way elite wings. That is a path to contention. And by the way, if you're Charlotte and you've got LaMelo Ball, that seems a natural fit, right? Like, hey, secondary wing shot creator next to LaMelo Ball, and suddenly, you know, you've really got something. I will also say, I've heard nothing but Whitmore seems to be the guy on the rise, doesn't he? Like, he's the guy out of Villanova I keep hearing about.
Yeah, hey, people like him. I've talked to scouts that are very high on him. I would also say that the twins have done very well in a lot of these workouts. And if you want to talk about pure upside, which is something I know Portland's front office values pretty highly, which, you know, we're going to get to, I'm sure, with some of the trade possibilities that are on the table. But I have heard a few people say, who really, you know, do this stuff, you know, all the time as far as evaluating, you know, amateur prospects or, you know, draft guys, that Amen Thompson might be the best athlete they have ever evaluated in the draft. So if you want to look at just like the pure upside play, you know, maybe even like one of the twins could be somebody that they, you know, go to. Like, there are, like, I think there's this idea that, you know, it's Wemby is obviously in his own tier, and then it's just, you know, Scoot and Miller are in their own tiers. I think that a lot of teams think that Scoot is number two behind Wemby, but I think there may be a little bit more, you know, split between, you know, some teams might like one of the twins more than Miller. Some teams might like Whitmore more than Miller. Like, you kind of see this happen every year. Usually there's even in like years where, like, remember a year ago, like, we all were going into the week of the draft thinking that it was like locked in that Jabari Smith was going to be the number one pick. And then like a day before the draft, suddenly the betting lines all just moved crazy. Like there was just this crazy shift of like, suddenly Paolo Banchero is like the heavy betting favorite to be the number one pick. And then he ends up being the number one pick. That's why it would be better for Portland if Scoot is there at three, both because, you know, if you think he has the prospect with the highest upside on the board, that, you know, that's who you'd want if you're going to keep the pick, but also that you might get different offers for that pick if he's there. I have to wonder if how much of a consensus there is that Charlotte likes Brandon Miller and is going to go with him at number two. I have to wonder how much of that is a similar thing to the Jabari Smith Paolo stuff from last year, where it's just going to shift like the night before the draft and suddenly, oh, now they're zeroed in on Scoot Henderson.
Yep. I think that that's distinctly possible. And by the way, as a side note, and I don't know if you've ever heard this, we can talk about it off air. I'm not going to do it on air. I haven't walked through the TikTok of how, not the app, the TikTok is in how it went down minute by minute of how the line started shifting and how that all happened. It's kind of fascinating. And someday
our mutual friend, Matt Moore.
Yes. He's really the guy who walked me through
reporting on that on the Action Network that.
Yes. I don't think he went through everything he told me because I know he couldn't nail quite
right. Right.
Down,
right. Right. I personally don't gamble. So I don't like, no, but, I don't like either. But I still like, I find that when something crazy like that happens, where there's just this radical shift in what the lines are, like, I find that stuff fascinating to follow.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, someday if it's not Matt, somebody will be able to nail it all and publish it. It's fascinating. Uh-huh. But I'm with you that could all change. But let's talk a little bit about, like there was suddenly a lot of buzz about particularly the New Orleans Pelicans having interest in that number two pick. And I guess this comes down to this. I mean, from Portland's perspective, let's say for fun, Henderson falls for three, Scoot falls to three. They'd jump at Zion, wouldn't they? Even with all the risk, they probably have to do it, right?
I think it would depend on what his medicals came back with. I think they would need to see a lot of that stuff. And by that, I mean they would have to... They would have to feel confident that it's not anything structural with any of this stuff. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, I don't think the Clippers are looking to trade Kawhi Leonard, but I would not trade for Kawhi Leonard just because... We know that he has a degenerative knee condition that is just always going to be there and is never going to get better and is always something that's going to have to be monitored, where he can maybe only play half or two thirds of a season. And it's just going to be like that for the rest of his career. You know, going back further, like, you know, Brandon Roy, degenerative knee condition, Lonzo Ball, obviously right now, those are extreme examples. But if the intel on Zion was that there was something like that in play where like, it's going to be something that's just always going to be there and is never going to get better, then I think at that point they might say, yeah, this isn't worth the risk. But if it's really just like he had this hamstring stuff this past year, he's had a knee surgery, he's had a foot surgery, and those are all just stress injuries where if he loses some weight and gets in better shape, maybe that stuff isn't going to be recurring. Then at that point, yeah, I think they ultimately would take the swing on it.
If you're Portland and you're in this win now spot, would you push for Brandon Ingram over Zion, who is... Again, when he plays, and he's got a reputation for kind of sitting with relatively minor injuries and not wanting to play unless he feels perfect. But, man, he's shot-creating wing, all-star-level shot-creating wing who does a lot of good things when he's on the court. Would that be the preference, or would you still have to go with Zion?
I don't think they're that interested in Ingram, actually.
Okay.
I just knowing what I know about this front office and how they operate, I'll give you an example of kind of just how, and this is a pretty limited sample size of this front office because Joe Cronin took over as general manager in December of 21 after they fired Neil Olshey. And so he's basically had, you know, two trade deadlines, one draft and one free agency process for us to kind of be able to evaluate how he operates and how his staff, you know, the moves that they make and the moves that they don't make. So last year at the draft, once they, you know, they talked pretty seriously with Toronto about trading the 7th overall pick for OG Anunoby. They decided not to at the end. The two guys that they were torn between with the number 7 pick once they decided to actually keep it and take somebody, one of them was Shaedon Sharpe, who they ended up taking. And the other one was Dyson Daniels, who went one pick later to New Orleans at number 8. The argument for Dyson Daniels that some folks in the front office were pushing for was that he would be more plug and play and, you know, he's ready to contribute right away and be a rotation player. And then the argument for Shaedon Sharpe was it's going to take a little bit longer for him to get ready, but if he hits, he could be an all-star. And they ended up going with the guy that they thought could be an all-star if he hits. And I think in retrospect, they're pretty happy with that decision because they really like what they saw out of him, particularly over the last month of the season. The Zion Ingram thing, I feel like if you're trading the pick and if Scoot Henderson is really, you know, this prospect that people say he's going to be, you better be getting something back that has a chance to be, you know, give you that kind of value. you know, Brandon Ingram, like, he's a good player, but, like, Brandon Ingram isn't changing your world. He's not, I don't think Brandon Ingram is making you a title contender. Whereas Zion Williamson, obviously, it's a huge risk with, you know, the health stuff and, you know, the work ethic stuff and the stuff with his family in his ear, whatever else. It is, yeah. it is a gamble, because if it wasn't a gamble, if that stuff wasn't there, then we wouldn't be having this conversation, because New Orleans would be a title contender every year and they wouldn't be talking about being open to trading him. But that's one of the ones where, you know, it's a huge risk and it could completely flame out and he could never be able to stay healthy. And then you, you know, traded the third pick for somebody that was a bust. But we've seen every time he's been healthy, pretty much.
Oh, he's
phenomenal. Been a top five player in the league, like an MVP caliber guy. So knowing what I know about how this front office likes to take swings on upside when the opportunity is there, I don't think there's a better upside play than taking a shot on Zion Williamson and hoping that, you know, getting to a different situation, because, you know, there have been concerns in the past about his conditioning and his work ethic and stuff. And I think the other thing that would be a good situation with him in Portland is, ever since he's been in New Orleans, you have to remember, they won that lottery the same summer that they traded Anthony Davis to the Lakers. And ever since he got there, through all of these, you know, uncertainties and these headaches about, you know, is he going to be healthy? You know, who's in his ear telling him what? Is he ever going to be able to play? He has been the guy that they have built that entire franchise around and centered everything around and catered everything towards since he got into the NBA. Yep. That's not going to be the case in Portland, where, you know, Dame is still the guy and everything has been built around Dame, and Dame is the one that sets the culture in the locker room. And you look at his track record of, you know, Yusuf Nurkic gets traded from Denver to Portland 7 or 8 years ago, whatever it was. And he came with these concerns from Denver about, like, oh, he had an attitude problem, or, you know, he, you know, whatever else. Dame, you know, obviously some of that stuff has come back up with Nurk since then. And, you know, he had that leg injury and he hasn't been the same guy really since then. But for those first couple of years, Dame really poured into, like, we're going to get the best out of this guy and we're going to, like, Dame got Hassan Whiteside to care. So, yeah. Like, I think the bet that they would be making is that being around Dame would be good for Zion in the way that it has been for other people. And that if he is able to get into, you know, the shape that he needs to get into to be able to stay healthy, that Dame and Zion together could be pretty dangerous. And I don't think the upside is quite the same with Brandon Ingram, even if the floor is a little bit higher.
Let's just say that I agree with you that if anybody, Damian Lillard, one of the great leaders in the league, might be the guy who can, I would say, help get through, help focus might be the better word. Zion Williamson. Sure. I'll just also say, from everything I've heard, and probably you've heard a lot of this too, but from people I've talked to, I'll believe it when I see it.
Like, yeah. I'm
very much in the, I believe it when I see it, because he's had plenty of people in his ear, plenty of things that you would think. And CJ, I thought, did a good job with him at first, but we'll see.
But the other thing is that, you know, the stuff, when you're talking about people in his ear, you know, the stuff that you've heard is that, like, his stepdad is there, and it's kind of, you know, it's not.
There's some, like, awkwardness there. Yeah.
Right. I kind of think that going to a situation where, you know, have this precedent in Portland of just, like, whatever Dame says goes as far as locker room culture stuff, it's a lot easier to tell the stepdad or whoever else in the family to fall back and, you know, not, you know, get involved with stuff when you have something like that in place. And it is in New Orleans, where it's like, well, you know, who else are you listening to?
I want to bring up something you brought up before. The buzz has been Shaedon Sharpe is completely off the table in trade talks. Is that true? Or is there a potential scenario where it's not?
I mean, if Joel Embiid asks out of Philadelphia and if it's like Embiid or Giannis or something like that, like, then yeah, you probably have to include Shaedon Sharpe, but no, it's not somebody that I think they're really open to moving short of that type of scenario.
Fair enough. Are there other teams? Obviously, the Pelicans were the really public team. Are there other teams we should be watching, looking at both? And that want to move up, that would talk to Portland, but also would talk to potentially Charlotte, who I think would be willing to move the pick for the right deal, although that might be one of the more unpredictable front offices, especially with the sale situation going on there.
I know Orlando really, really wants Scoot. That's something I heard going back to lottery night, that
he would be a great fit, by the way.
like, they are desperate to move up for Scoot. I don't think they necessarily have anything Portland would want, because I don't think they're like, you know, there's this idea, you know, they could trade the third pick for the sixth pick and the 11th pick. I don't think they're really interested.
That's not helping Portland.
If they're going to trade the pick, they're going to trade the pick for a guy that, you know, moves the needle in the direction of contending with Dame. And I don't think Orlando has anybody that really fits that bill. But Orlando is a team that I've heard for a month is really, really into the idea of getting Scoot. As far as Portland trade partners are concerned, I think the other one to keep an eye on with them, you know, besides New Orleans, if Scoot is there, is Brooklyn, just because I know that the player that I think, you know, if you could ask Dame, and, you know, Dame has said this on the record, I'm not breaking any news here, but, you know, I've talked to Dame, you know, privately about this too. And, you know, Dame is a guy that, like, what he says on the record is the same stuff he's going to say off the record. He doesn't really have much of a filter, but, like, if you asked him if there's any player that is, like, semi-gettable, so taking out, like, Jokic, Embiid, like, those types of guys, Giannis, that they could go get, who is the number one guy you would want them to go get? He would tell you Mikal Bridges. And part of that is because they're friends and they work out together in the summers. They have the same trainer. So, like, Dame actually had him as a guest counselor for one of his camps that I covered last summer. So they have a relationship. So part of it is that. But Dame also, like, he watches, like, that dude, I don't know if you've ever talked to that dude just about the league and about, you know, the game. That dude watches as much League Pass as anybody. And he has very strong opinions about, like, players around the league and teams that he likes and doesn't like and whatever else. But he feels like Mikal Bridges is, like, the exact right kind of, you know, defensive-minded wing to put next to him and next to Jeremy Grant. That, like, if they could get something done there, I think that would be Dame's first choice. Now, it's actually kind of funny how the conversation has swung as it's gotten closer to the draft, because when they moved up to three, you know, there was this idea that, you know, maybe they would trade the third pick and Anthony Simons for Mikal Bridges. And what you started hearing from the Brooklyn side was, no, that is absolutely not happening. Mikal's completely off the table. He's untouchable. He's our franchise player. Now it's kind of started to shift the other way of, like, is it worth it for Portland to do that? Or would Portland have to get more back in addition to Mikal Bridges if Scoot is really as good as people say he is, or if Brandon Miller is really as good as people say he is? Would they have to get, like, Nick Claxton or something back in that trade too? But my point being, I don't know at the end of the day whether Brooklyn is going to be open to, you know, that type of trade. But when you're talking about the guys that they would be willing to move the pick for, you're talking about, like, a Mikal Bridges, a, you know, Zion, you know, would be the home run swing. Obviously, there are the concerns there that we talked about and the risks with the injuries and stuff. I think a lot of teams are kind of over dealing with Masai Ujiri at this point just because he values his guys so high. But, you know, I think Pascal Siakam is somebody that they would be interested in if that were an option.
By the way, it may be the most underrated star in the league. They should absolutely, if he were available and you could swing some sort of deal for that pick, and like you said, Ujiri.
I mean, he's going to...
I think they're in trouble because he overvalued his picks, but...
Well, he kind of overplayed his hand last year. I alluded to this before, but the Blazers were going pretty hard after OG Anunoby last year on draft night.
Yeah, with good reason. He's a great player.
Right, and he's a defensive wing that you could put next to Dame. You know, it would have been a great fit. The Raptors wanted more than just the seventh pick for him. They wanted, like, I think it was like Josh Hart, Nasir Little, and another future first. And Portland, I would say rightfully so, decided that that's too much to give up for OG Anunoby, so they walked away. But, like, and so I kind of wonder if Masai kind of overplayed his hand with this, because, like, now Pascal is going into the last year of his deal, and, you know, you're already seeing they probably are going to lose Fred VanVleet for nothing this offseason. So, like, but what I'm saying is basically, like, when the one, like, big win now move that they made last summer was trading for Jeremy Grant. And Grant was such a perfect fit with Dame, you know, because they kind of have figured out at this point that the types of guys that they need to surround Dame with. That's why, you know, I hear names like Zach LaVine thrown around. They're not interested in that. Bradley Beal, now that he's available in trade, they're not interested in that, because I think they've figured out that the types of guys you need to put around Dame are big athletic wings that can defend. And that's why you're seeing, you know, a guy like Mikal Bridges get thrown around, or, you know, Pascal Siakam. It's a little bit of a weird fit with Jeremy, but I think you can figure that part out, if you, because I think they can complement each other, even if size-wise it's a little bit too similar. You know, Jaylen Brown, it sounds like Boston is not going to trade and is going to pay that super max too.
Everything I've heard about that is they want to bring him back. They still think this can work. And
right.
I know there's a lot of people out there like, yeah, did you see what Jaylen said? He didn't sound like he wanted to be there.
Right.
That's not how I read it.
He'll want to be there if they pay him that $300 million or whatever.
Exactly.
But if there were a scenario where Boston didn't want to pay him that and he became available in trade, that's somebody that they would be interested in. But I've heard the same thing as you have, that Boston isn't really moving him. But my point is, those are the types of guys that Portland is going after. If they're going to move the pick, those are the types of guys that they want to bring in.
By the way, I expect Boston to be a lot better next year, just because Sam Cassell is on the sidelines now, and then he's going to bring the big balls dance, and they're just going to be better. So,
yeah, that was a good hire. I mean, you have to remember, like, you know, even putting aside the Udoka stuff, which, you know, that was like a huge wrench that got thrown into their season like a week before training camp. You know, Damon Stoudemire, who was one of the most important assistants on Joe Mazzulla's staff, left like near the end of the season to take a job at Georgia Tech. So
yes, that
like,
one stung.
They needed
that, that was the guy, by the way, if you talk to people during the playoffs, that I was talking to people from Boston, they were saying Stoudemire was the guy who was the connection between the players and the coach. Like,
yes.
And when he left, that, I don't want to say severed, but like they never really replaced that line. And I, by the way, I don't totally blame Boston on this. That was hey, 3 days before camp, boom. Like,
think they saw the Udoka stuff coming.
Oh, if they saw it coming, Will Hardy would be the coach right now.
Yes.
Who did a fantastic job in Utah. If they knew that was coming, they would never have let Will Hardy go.
I do agree with you that Sam Cassell is going to, maybe he can kind of slide into that same role that Damon Stoudemire had. I've heard nothing but good things about him from, you know, his time with the Wizards and his time with the Sixers. So
we'll see what happens. As we move down this draft, the other thing I keep hearing outside of, you know, basically every pick in the top five being available, is to expect a lot of movement in closer to where Portland's second pick is at 23. A lot in the late teens and stuff is teams want to, there's two things. There's teams trying to do what Denver's kind of trying to do, and I think the Lakers and Phoenix are trying to do, which is, hey, under this new CBA, we got to find cheap role players. We're going to try to do it. It's almost like the NFL in a sense. They're going to try to do it through the draft. They're going to try to round this thing out through the draft now because it's cheaper. And there's would the Lakers give up 17 to move back into the two Brooklyn picks in the 20s so that they can get two guys? I don't think that kind of move, which you didn't really used to see in the NBA much, I think you're going to see more of in the coming years as teams try to figure out how to round out the rosters with depth. And every pick is, and the picks in the high 30s count too, because I think if you get somebody at 35, it's like picking late in the first, right? I think you're going to see a lot of that. So are you hearing that? Are you hearing a lot of movement later in the draft?
Well, I think, you know, it's exactly what you said. This new CBA is so restrictive with, you know, once you get to that second apron, there's so much stuff you can't do, that I think if teams can have, you know, young talent that, you know, is on a, you know, rookie scale contract, or you have them on a cheap deal for 4 years, like that helps. You know, if you're paying, like, let's say you're, you know, I don't know what Boston's draft pick situation is off the top of my head, but if you're Boston and you're paying Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum both a ton of money, you got to fill out the rest of your roster somehow. And you don't want to do it with just like vet min guys. You want to have, you know, young guys with upside that, you know, are under team control for several years. I think a thing that's going to be helpful, I think, to this, and this is something that I haven't seen talked about that much. I think it's been reported. I actually wrote about it. So I don't think I was the only one that did, but in the new CBA, there's a cap exception called the second round pick exception, where you basically get to sign one of your second round picks to more than just like a 2 year minimum deal without dipping into your mid level. Cause in the past, like if you draft somebody in the second round and you want to sign them to a real contract, like a 3 or 4 year deal, you have to use the mid level exception to do it. But now I think there's a thing, I don't have it in front of me, but there is a provision in the new CBA that if you draft somebody in the second round, you can sign them to like a 3 year deal under the second round pick exception, and that doesn't count towards your mid-level or whatever. So there are mechanisms, I think, in place for teams to be able to have young talent for more years, basically to counteract just how prohibitive it's going to be to have like multiple stars making max or close to max. So I do agree. And I, especially, you know, if you're a team like the Lakers, where like, yeah, you traded all your future picks away in these deals for these, you know, these big stars, and you still have LeBron and you still have Anthony Davis, and you're going to have to presumably pay, you know, Austin Reeves to come back. And, you know, you have a couple other guys making, you know, that type of money. It wouldn't be the worst thing. And then, I mean, one thing I'll give the Lakers, you know, for whatever you want to say about that front office and that organization and how they've done things the last few years, they are really good at scouting outside of the lottery. Like, you look at, you know, they found Alex Caruso, they found Austin Reeves, they have found guys. And I think that, you know, that scouting department, you know, if you're them, like, you can, what do you say, they have the 17th pick?
Yeah, I think
so. That moving back, you know, if you're a Laker fan, you probably feel like you trust that front office if they move maybe back from that 17th pick to, like you said, the 21st and 22nd picks from Brooklyn. You probably feel like there's a pretty good chance that that scouting department and that front office is going to be able to find one, or, you know, at least go 1 for 2 on those guys.
Yeah. I think the best example of what we're talking about is, just to use the team that just won the title,
what they just did during the finals.
Christian Brown. You're going to need Christian Browns of the world. You're going to need to nail some later first round picks that you can bring in relatively affordably who can help. I think you're going to see more guys who spent 2 or 3 years in college and sometimes slip to the second round, might not anymore, or might go pretty early in the second because teams are like, man, can this guy walk in and play tomorrow for a contending or playoff team? That's going to matter. Where I think the upside swings are going to be, the building teams can take we're not very good. We've got the 15th pick too. Let's draft that Antetokounmpo guy and see if we can develop
him,
and see what happens. But you know, there's more misses than hits on those. And sometimes, you know, obviously that's the hit, but for all the misses, you've got to take some swings. And I think it's, championship teams aren't going to be in a position to do that because they can't just say, well, we'll take a swing on this guy because maybe it pans out. But if it doesn't pan out, it doesn't really matter because we can just go get a bunch of guys on the vet minimum. It's going to be harder to put that kind of thing together.
Right. Well, I mean, do you look at the Golden State has kind of tried to thread that needle the last couple of years where they said, you know, look, we have this, you know, Steph, Clay, Draymond, you know, this core that's been together forever and, you know, is a title contending group. But, you know, we're also going to try to develop James Wiseman and Jonathan Kuminga and, you know, Jordan Poole, some of these younger guys. Now, I think that could have worked if they had drafted the right guys. Like, if they had drafted, you know, LaMelo Ball or Tyrese Halliburton at number 2 instead of James Wiseman, I think we would be talking about their quote-unquote two timelines thing very differently. Yeah. Or, like, if Jonathan Kuminga was a little bit better than he is, I think they just took the wrong guys. Like, taking the swings like that can work, but it's a lot more of a risk. And if you're a team, again, you know, a team like the Warriors, if you're paying Steph, Clay, and Draymond a ton of money, then, you know, if you have one first, I don't even know off the top of my head, do they have a first round pick this year or no, they do. They have like the 19th.
Yeah. 19th. Pick, something. Yeah.
Something like that. I'll bet now, especially if, you know, and everything we've heard, there had been kind of some uncertainty during the season. It sounds now like all three of those guys are going to be back. Like, I think Draymond's going to stick around.
They're going to bring the core back, and then that gets interesting. That's a podcast we'll save for later.
Right? Yeah.
Can Poole and Draymond actually get along?
You might have to have someone on who knows the Warriors inside and out better than I do. But I'll bet at that 19th pick, if you're paying Steph, Clay, and Draymond what you're paying them,
yeah,
you're probably going to be more inclined now. And I don't even know who's going to be making that pick now that Bob Myers isn't there anymore. Is it going to be Mike Dunleavy?
The buzz has been Dunleavy and Kirk LaCobe are, want to say co-doing it, but they're the powers now.
But so I'll bet when they're looking at what to do in the draft, they're going to lean more towards taking somebody who they view as more plug and play, you know, ready to be a contributor right now than whoever the next Jonathan Kuminga is, that like, hey, this guy could be really good in 2 years, but it's going to take him 2 years. We don't have that kind of time with Steph, Clay, and Draymond at the age they are making the money that they're making.
Yeah. You I mean, you've been probably watching this. When you get into the 20s and teens, is there anybody who's kind of jumped out at you where you're like, I kind of like that guy. Like, I don't know if Portland's going to get him, but player X kind of jumps off the board at me.
I go entirely on vibes and whether I like somebody in the draft workout interviews that we get to do. And my two picks in that regard that I think are projected kind of around that range, one of them was Max Lewis from Pepperdine, who just came in today. And he seems like, you know, I've heard that he has a lot of upside. The other one that I'm really intrigued by is Andre Jackson Jr. out of UConn. Not a great offensive player, or at least not a great scorer, but like apparently a great passer for a big man, and a great defender, kind of a really, you know, unique player. Like that's somebody that I'm kind of intrigued by. But this is one of the, when you talk about like Portland's situation, they have Mike Schmitz in their front office. So I will just, I'll kind of trust his judgment more than my own as somebody who watches very little college basketball. I think he is,
people who don't know, he was one of the guys at ESPN before getting hired at the Trailblazers. Yeah. And
he was one of the drivers in the decision to take Shaedon Sharpe, because he was one of the few guys when he was, you know, with ESPN and, you know, going to all these events all over the world. He was one of the few guys that had actually seen him play.
Yes.
Like against actual competition at AAU. So, you know, I don't have a real feel for who, you know, they are really interested in that's almost one where I kind of feel like it's kind of the same thing. Like, let's say they decide to keep the third pick and they take Scoot Henderson. That's an upside play. If you're going to keep the 23rd pick also and take somebody, maybe you take somebody who is more plug and play and somebody who's more like, I think the name that gets connected to them a lot, I don't think they brought him in for a workout, but the name that has kind of been connected to them in some of these mock drafts is Chris Murray, Keegan Murray's brother.
Yes.
You know, also seen as kind of similar to his brother, maybe not as much upside because he's not going to go fourth.
No, he is not his brother. But
if you know, most people I've talked to about him say,
but solid rotation player.
He's going to be a good rotation player, and you're going to be able to play him from year one, and he's going to be able to stay on the floor. That I kind of feel like that's the type of guy you're going to look at in the 20s. Whereas in the top of the lottery, you're going to want to just get the most talented player you can and worry about the fit later.
Yeah, the other guy I kind of like in there is, I hope, Sissoko, the
city Sissoko. They brought him in for a workout a couple weeks ago. Again, as a vibes guy, I'm a fan.
Yeah, 6'7" wing, point guard. He's got some skills, but on top of that, plays some defense. And there is something I think to be said, and I'm curious. It'd be fun to, you never get the truth serum on guys like Mike Schmidt or any of these scouts, but like, how much do you trust what you see from guys who play in the G League and the G League Ignite, where you're getting a certain level of competition? And because college can be, you're talking about a guy out of Pepperdine. How do you project? I mean, you project Lillard came out of Weber State and it turns out he, you know, was pretty good. But sometimes it's just hard to project out of those smaller schools and the level of competition. Frankly, even if you're at Duke or North Carolina or, you know, UCLA or pick your powerhouse school.
Right.
It's still such an up and down level of competition that sometimes it's harder to judge. Where I'm curious, I'd be curious what they think, because to me, somebody coming out of, hey, at least he played against professionals, I've got some sense of X. I can judge X, you know, better. But I'm also not a scout, so I could be horribly, horribly wrong about all of that.
Yeah, I'm not a scout either. I will say one thing that I think is notable is when it comes to, you know, how Portland might approach that stuff. They're going to have a G League team for the first time.
Yes.
In a while. They haven't announced the team. They just announced, you know, their head coach today. They announced, you know, some front office hires like a week ago. One of the front office hires that they announced last week was Pooh Jeter, who, you know, had a pretty long overseas career, briefly played for the Kings. He's 39. He had just been kind of hanging on in the G League, but he was on the Ignite this past year.
Yep.
The past 2 years, actually. And so this was one of those ones where, like, when they announced that hire, a lot of people kind of started putting it together, because he apparently was a close mentor of Scoot Henderson. And he was actually came up to Portland to watch Scoot, or to be with Scoot during his workout. And then they, you know, the Blazers hired him to be in the front office of their G League team a day later. But, you know, the fact that they are, you know, taking, you know, hiring somebody who just played for the G League Ignite to be in the front office of their G League team. And I think a lot of this is, you know, you can speak to, you know, Mike Schmitz is somebody who's gone to, you know, all these different corners of the world and then just scouting college or just scouting like the big international leagues. One of the guys on a two-way contract for the Blazers who didn't actually play a minute this year is this kid from Senegal named Ibu Baji, who came up through the Basketball Without Borders camp and the NBA Africa Academy stuff. And that was a total, I did a story on him a few months ago. That was a total, like, Mike Schmitz was at all of these like under 16 tournaments in Africa. And he saw this kid and had been tracking him for 6 years. Like, this is like, I think they're, it's a front office that is willing to, you know, go to all different parts of the world and different types of leagues and different types of competition to find guys.
Cool. One last question, kind of on a broader note, are you hearing kind of what I am, which is I expect a pretty active trade and moving scenario, both the night of the draft and through early free agency, because teams are so afraid of what's coming in 2 years that the teams that want to make moves, I think all the teams that have these if questions, your Phoenixes, your Lakers, like all the teams who are like, no, if they just do X, they can really take a step forward, or like, and Portland may be one of those where you're like, You got to do it now because it gets really hard in a couple years.
Yeah, because I mean, what is it? 2 years from now that the real, you know, apron stuff gets really phased in.
And it's not this summer, but it's the July of 2024 where it really kicks in.
Super, right? Super restrictive. So yeah, I mean, you are going to see teams, I think, moving stuff around or, you know, doing consolidation, or I guess maybe not consolidation trades, but like deconsolidation trades, where if you have one guy that's making, you know, 40 million, you want to get, you know, for, you know, trade him for like two or three guys making 12 or 15 million, because then it's easier for you to add depth. Like, I think we are going to see a lot of that kind of stuff. And then even, you know, just on the high end, like, you know, I think the biggest question about free agency is, you know, what's James Harden going to do? Is he going to stay in Philadelphia, or is he going to go back to Houston? And then if he goes back to Houston, what's Philadelphia going to do to replace him? Like, are they going to try to get in the mix for Fred VanVleet? Like, how's that going to work? Or if Harden stays in Philly, then like, what's Houston do? They have all these this cap space. Do they try to go after Kyrie Irving, which, you know, that's a decision you can make, I guess, but like, they have all this money to throw around. And then like, all throughout, like, you have this Beal stuff kind of hanging over everything now, that like, that's the first, you know, quote unquote star level guy, even though he hasn't really been that the last few years, that like is gonna theoretically be available to get in a trade. And then there's other stuff that could come down the line. It's gonna be a pretty active summer.
I agree. I think you're just going to see more moves now than later, but it's going to be a wild ride. Draft night kind of always is, though, isn't it? Draft night never quite goes.
We know where number one is going to be, but that's it. That's the only thing we know.
The draft starts at two in this case. The draft starts at, you know, sometimes it's four, sometimes it's three.
Yeah. But
this year, I think it's two. I think it really gets rolling at two, and I think you're going to see. I think it's going to be a wild night. And Sean, I imagine you will be in the Portland War Room, but to wherever they're hosting their media events.
Yeah, they do something at the practice facility, and then Joe Cronin is going to talk afterwards, whatever they end up doing. It was actually funny, last year they agreed to the Jeremy Grant trade the day before the draft. And then, but the trade wasn't made official until
they can't talk about it.
So Joe gets up, they take Shaedon Sharpe in the first round. And then, you know, after the draft, Joe gets up at the podium and he's like, hey, just so everybody knows, there's a reported trade out there that I'm not allowed to talk about. So I can only answer questions about our draft picks tonight. I wonder if it's going to be that type of situation with whatever they do. Or
I think a few of those trades, when you're talking about in particular, somebody like Miami, just to use an easy example, depending on how they want to structure a theoretical Beal trade, and they're kind of the front runners. Tyler Hero is on a contract for, I think, $5.5-6 million right now, and that jumps to $27 million on July 1st. So how are you structuring the trade? Do you want him to be worth $27 million, or you want to throw Lowry in and, you know, like, I mean, how are you structuring the trade? So it's going to be really interesting.
I'm pretty sure, and you'd have to ask Eric Pincus this. He's going to know this more, you know, definitively than I am. But I'm pretty sure once a season is over, you're trading a player at their next season salary? Because I've gotten this question a lot.
Is that okay? Maybe that's true. Maybe
I've gotten this question a lot in the last few days about the Zion stuff, because Zion is about to go into the first year of that 5-year max extension that he signed. So like right now, his cap number for this past season that just ended was like $13 million, and then this coming season it's going to be like 33, 35, something like that. My understanding is that if they trade for Zion, they're going to have to send out $35 million in matching salary.
Okay, so that makes more sense, and yeah, because otherwise you'd, I don't know, sometimes there's little moves at the end to get under, but that would be earlier, so.
Yeah.
There's always some juggling at the end, but it's going to be a wild night. Sean, thank you for doing this. Remind everybody who's listened to all this and kind of got sucked in where they can, if you're a Blazers fan, you got to subscribe. Tell them where they can do this and what they should be doing.
RoseGardenReport.com, the free subscriptions or paid subscriptions. Obviously now this time of year, I'm putting a lot more of the stuff that I write behind the paywall, but I think there's a lot of insight and reporting and stuff there that I don't think you're getting from anyone else that's covering the team. So I would recommend you, I mean, I'm a little bit biased and I would like for people to subscribe, but I think if I say so myself, I think I'm giving people a quality product for the money who choose to pay for it. And then the podcast, same name, Rose Garden Report, that's just free on Apple, Spotify, all the usual places that you get podcasts. And you can follow me on Twitter @Hyken, and that's about it.
Yeah, and Sean, thank you so much for doing this, buddy. Hopefully, are you going to be there? Are we seeing each other in Vegas?
I'll be there the first, 4 or 5 days, I think.
I think that's, yeah, I'm going to be there then, and San Antonio will let me know whether I need to go to Sacramento or not.
I would be very surprised if you need to go to Sacramento.
By the way, do you think he even plays?
No.
In summer league? I don't think so.
I think the NBA would like for him to play.
Oh, God, yes.
I think they'd like for him to play one game in Vegas just to be able to put it on.
I think that would be their ideal, but I, you know.
Well, like remember, Zion played his rookie year.
We played a half.
Right, he played a half, but he still played.
He still played.
If you want to, like, whatever Portland does with their pick, whether they keep it or trade it, I think it's within the realm of possibility that Shaedon Sharpe does the Brandon Ingram play 1 or 2 games at summer league going into his second year.
Really? And that'd be a good thing.
He said he wants to, and I think that they would let him play 1 or 2 games and then shut him down. But so I haven't gotten definitive word on that, but that's within the realm of possibility.
I think, by the way, you're right about Wemby, that they would ideally like him to play a game. It's just like you and I were talking before about this, about the French league finals that are still going on as of
yeah.
He's played as long as the guys in the NBA finals. I don't know how many of them you're going to ask to turn around and play in July. So I would get it if he doesn't. I will tell you, with Shaedon or anybody else, one of my golden rules of summer league, if you got regular run in the NBA and then they put you and you play a little bit in summer league, you better dominate. Mm-hmm. Like
Brought up Brandon Ingram. Remember, like his set when he was still with the Lakers, they played him one game his second year, and he dropped like 40, and they were just like, nope, you don't need to do this anymore. Yeah. I remember my first summer league was 2012, which was Dame's rookie year, and both Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard played as second year guys in summer league, and it was just like, I think both of them got pulled after. I think Jimmy actually might have played longer because he's a psycho and he wants to play, you know, as many games as possible. But I know Kawhi Leonard played one game for the Spurs, and then they were just like, "Nope, you're done. You don't need to do this."
Yeah, if you can tell the guys who get regular run, and if you can't, and there's, I remember the first time I'm like, I saw Noah Vonleh when he came out the second year and he'd gotten some run, and I'm like, ooh, well that's concerning. Like, it's concerned. There are guys, it's not universal, but by and large, if you played a fair amount as a rookie, you should own summer league. So we'll see how it goes. Sean, when we get out there, though, I will buy you a Capriati sandwich. So
that's the tradition, isn't it?
I believe it is. So,
all right, I'll see you in a couple weeks, man.
I'll see you in a few weeks. Thanks, everybody, for doing this. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be back next week with more draft talk with we're going to drop the day before the draft with Corey Robinson. So thank you everybody for listening.